Hey, this is John Lee Dumas from EO Fire, and you're listening to Elective Rotation with Pharmacy Joe. You must be prepared to ignite.
What's up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to the Elective Rotation, a critical care pharmacy podcast. This is episode 24, Mechanical Ventilation Tips for Pharmacists. Today's episode is longer than usual so that I can bring you a fantastic interview with a respiratory therapist I work with. In addition to the interview, I'm sharing with you a two-page PDF that I give to my students and residents describing the pharmacist's role in mechanical ventilation. You can get the PDF and the show notes for today's episode at pharmacyjoe.com/episode24. Let's get to the interview. I'm excited to have my first guest here on the Elective Rotation podcast. Today we'll be talking with one of the most talented and patient-focused respiratory therapists that I know.
Thank you, Joe.
He's also a tremendous advocate for bedside pharmacy services in emergency situations, and he spends a considerable amount of time helping to train pharmacy students and residents that are on rotation with me. I'm happy to introduce to Pharmacy Nation, R.T. Pete.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure to have my time taken out to be able to explain this to your pharmacy students.
Thank you. Thanks, Pete, for taking the time to be here today. Several listeners have asked me to review ventilator settings and specifically what a pharmacist should know about them. And I couldn't think of anyone that could explain it better than you. Let's start with how would you describe positive pressure ventilation?
I'm going to take you back to most likely third, fourth, or fifth grade with everybody at this point when they would take the bell jar, the vacuum jar. You put dates, grapes, tomatoes, other foods into a vacuum sealed jar. This is going back to taking a balloon or two balloons, putting it inside the vacuum sealed jar and getting a piece of cardboard. When you pull down and you close the mason jar, if you would, you'll see air going into and out of the balloon. You'll see the balloons actually de facto insufflating and exsufflating with air. That's intrathoracic negative pressure. That's how we breathe also. Our diaphragm is the, if you will, cardboard piece. And when our diaphragm descends as a result of innervation of the phrenic nerve, our lungs fill up with air. That is negative ventilation. Going back to the days of people that had polio or neuromuscular diseases, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, we would put them in a negative pressure cuirass, a tortoise shell, for lack of a better word. We've moved on technologically from that to, that is by definition, you would have the whole chamber breathe for the patient on it. And as the chamber moved, the chest would move up and move down. That was the best mimicking that we can think of having negative pressure ventilation. However, the problem was you'd have pooling of the blood in the abdomen cavity, and that's not good. Positive pressure ventilation inverts everything that we know. I now take your body's system that would normally breathe negatively, i.e. you initiate a breath, your diaphragm drops, your lungs fill with air. I now have to positively put pressure into you. It can be non-invasive in terms of via CPAP or BiPAP or CyPAP if it's a neonate, or it can be invasive where I, an anesthesiologist, a doctor, through intervention can put somebody through direct visual laryngoscopy on a ventilator, which you would then be giving them positive pressure ventilation. You override the body's intrinsic need or want to breathe in negatively or breathe as it were, and you're pushing air into the lungs, which is positive pressure ventilation, as opposite what I had just said, which is negative pressure ventilation. Positive pressure ventilation is any machine that is pushing air into the lungs that is hooked up either intrinsically or extrinsically to a PSI, and it overcomes your ability to breathe, and it creates its own work of breathing.
Gotcha. Thank you. So what are some common modes of positive pressure ventilation that you might use?
The ones at the institution that I normally utilize here are, we use Sermon Mackay ventilators. And as such, we have modes that are intrinsic to the Siemens Mackay ventilator. In such, these modes are PRVC, pressure regulated volume control. Volume control allows you to give tidal volume. Tidal volume is the air that we breathe breath to breath to breath to breath. What you would consider as you're just reading a book, a breathing along, that's tidal volume. When you take one of those which is known as a sigh, it's called an intrinsic sigh. Sigh, S-I-G-H, is nothing more than about 1.5 to 2 times tidal volume. So you do it just about every 50 breaths, and you don't realize you do it, Joe. Everybody has to do it. It's just the body's way to deal with microatelectasis. Just, we're just keeping up as deep as we possibly can the lung volumes. When you're on a ventilator, mechanically assisted ventilation, PRVC goes upon initialization, 3 breaths, gives a very quick high peak flow breath, which is usually the highest of the 3 test breaths to evaluate your compliance. It then gives a much slower, shorter breath, which is the shortest one, the shortest breath given that'll be maybe 5 or 8 centimeters above peak inspiratory pressure. And the last one is the 3rd breath, where it figures out what is the most ideal amount of pressure to be able to put into the body cavity, the chest cavity, to get the desired tidal volume that you're requesting. As I sit across from Joe, we have gone to lower tidal volumes, higher rates, which was completely the antithesis of the 80s and the 90s, 1980s, 1990s, when you would have very large tidal volumes, but very small flow rates or respiratory rates, 8 to 10, but have 8, 9, 1,000 cc tidal volumes. Looking at Joe, I know many of you probably don't know what Joe looks like, but just from my years of experience, I would not feel comfortable putting anything more than 600 cc's into Joe's body. Between 5 and 600, I'd feel comfortable. And to be quite honest, I'm guessing 550 would be adequate for Joe. In such a way, by putting Pharmacy Joe, and nothing's wrong with Pharmacy Joe, Pharmacy Nation, putting Pharmacy Joe on a ventilator, I would anesthetize him such that I would have complete control over his airway via either my manual placement or a The glide scope. Thank you, Joe. The glide scope. I would intubate Joe. And then from there, by putting him on the machine, let's just say for whatever, like Joe happened to have a severe pneumonia, the 3 test breaths will come in 37, 20, and then it may sit at 22 to 23. So it would tell me 22 centimeters of water pressure minus the 5 centimeters of water pressure peep, positive and expiratory pressure, would give me a working pressure in Joe's lungs on PRVC of 17 centimeters of water that would get the tidal volume desired of 550. This mode, PRVC, is a very easy mode in terms of it's continuous. It does not require the healthcare personnel to do, air quote, much thinking. I put the rate in, how fast I'm going to breathe it for you. I put your tidal volume in, how much I'm giving you. I put your oxygen concentration is, the concentration of oxygen I'm giving you, and I put the PEEP in, and it pretty much just runs. Now, I do that for disease states that I want to maintain alveolar ventilation at a level regardless of pressure, Joe.
Okay.
Now, even though pressure is given, PRVC, the C of the PRVC is pressure regulated volume control. I'm trying to control the amount of pressure that I'm putting into your chest to the lowest amount of pressure that will adequately deliver, in your case, the 550 tidal volume. Now, Pharmacy Nation, we're going to switch. 2 months from now, it's where we live, it's going to be the dead of winter. Pharmacy Joe is going to take the Pharmacy Joe Litz out for skiing. He goes skiing. He and the wife to each take a child. Joe, unfortunately, decides to go Black Diamond. He's not ready to go Black Diamond, and he smacks into a tree.
Ouch.
It's going to hurt a little bit more than that, but yes. Now Joe has got what we would consider on the left side of his chest, 6 broken ribs. By definition, Pharmacy Nation, that's called flail chest. He's going to overcompensate his right side because his right side is not broken. So therefore, he's going to splint on his left to take deep breaths on his right. What that does is deleterious to the left side of the lung due to the fact that now I am splinting the left side. I am forcibly creating physiologically as well as anatomically a shunt and a splint. Physiologically, he's got 6 broken ribs. That's a lot, people, on the left side. No one will take a deep breath. Secondarily, by not adequately breathing his lung as it was prior to the accident, he's going to create muscle fatigue that's not being used now. So now, Joe, leaning hard over to his left with his right side up, he's going to create at least atelectasis on the side of his lung, plus the broken ribs, plus the contusion, and most likely a pneumothorax, because he's going to create a fissure in the air, in the chest cavity. In this case, 99, 44, 100% of the time, you're going to go on what we call pressure control ventilation, Joe. So as Pharmacy Nation, now I'm holding up my hand, the right hand to Joe, being PRVC. PRVC, I am giving you a set tidal volume, a set rate, a set FiO2 and PEEP, which will create a set minute volume. In this case, Joe, if I were to say to you, 12 breaths a minute times a tidal volume of 550 cc's is 12 times 0.55, Pharmacy Nation, which is a minute volume of about 6.6 liters per minute. I know the rate, I know the tidal volume, I know the FiO2 that I'm putting in, and as a result of the first two, I will know the minute volume that I'm giving you. And I'm wholly unconcerned about that because I can maintain all of those higher rate up or lower rate and tidal volume down. Pressure control, I am trying to maximize volume via pressure control. I'm only concerned about putting a X factor. In this case, going back, Pharmacy Nation, after the third breath of PRVC, the peak inspiratory pressure for Joe's tidal volumes on PRVC were 22. However, I also said to you, but you have to subtract the PEEP to get the total working pressure, 17 centimeters. So now that I've known Joe from before, months ago when he had his pneumonia, and it's been resolved, I know, and it just may be this, that Joe will only need 17 centimeters of pressure. That was healthy Joe with a pneumonia. This is now Joe with flail chest. So now Joe comes in and Joe is getting 29 over 5, meaning the peak inspiratory pressure is 29, the PEEP is 5, and the total working pressure is 34. I want you to think about that for a second, Pharmacy Nation. It's going to be 29 over 5, but the peak pressure on the vent will read 34. So what I want you to think about now is, in PRVC, I will take my peak pressure, subtract it from my PEEP, and I get a total working pressure, breath to breath, of 550. And I'm just looking at Joe. Joe totally gets what I'm saying. However, in pressure control, I am putting in 29 centimeters to get 550. Now, you'll notice he's now doubled the pressure going to pressure control. Well, in this case, just because of Joe's disease state, for example, I have to get that. He's got a consolidated lung on the left. He probably has a chest tube at this point. He's probably anesthetized, so Joe is not taking breaths above what I have set on the machine. So he is wholly dependent on me for the respiratory rate, as well as to maintain a tidal volume of around 550. I'm going to say that to you guys again. Of around 550. I put in the 29 centimeters of water pressure. I may get 476 back. I may get 802 cc's back. I may get 550 cc's back. I may get 650 cc's back. But then Joe starts coughing, is moved in the bed, or attempts physical therapy as we're lightening his sedation and we're trying to get him better. Now that 29 over 5 is a tidal volume of 325, or it's a tidal volume of 414, or maybe it's 496. It's not hitting 550. Long story short, in the neighborhood of PRVC, I can know at the end of the night, tidal volume, respiratory rate, oxygen, and minivolume are going to all be on the same street.
It sounds like the pressure, though, is the variable.
Correct, it is. Pressure control, I put the pressure in, and I am not wholly unconcerned of tidal volume, but I don't want to over-distend your lung and create more barotrauma to a lung that's already diseased, as it were. People with severe disease states, systemic inflammatory response syndrome, adult respiratory distress syndrome, people with tumors, people with severe surgeries, adding to or taking away, might find themselves on a pressure control. Somebody who's very, very sick, going to where we're coming to in the winter, will get very, very sick people who may start out on PRVC, but we have to go up to a respiratory rate of 30, 35, 38, 40. It behooves us to put them on pressure control. As I was saying, the peak flow won't be as desecrated in pressure control as it will be in PRVC. And again, Pharmacy Nation, I'm not trying to confuse you. I'm just trying to give you the normal ventilator settings that we have at this institution. Joe's gotten 1,000% better. One of those modes that I was talking to you about is called CPAP. And along with CPAP, we're going to do a PSV trial. CPAP, continuous positive airway pressure, PSV, pressure support ventilation. Meaning, at this point, he is still on the ventilator. However, now, Joe is spontaneously taking his own breaths. Therefore, sedation, off, gone. He cannot be on sedation. Or if you have to be on sedation, very low levels. And in our institution, in such a way, that can be achieved by using Presidex. There it is. Yeah. There it is. You guys have to worry about that. I don't. It's just the knockout juice for me. So I would put Joe on Presidex, hopefully weaned off all other drugs.
So no fentanyl, no propofol,
none of that. Drips. No neuromuscular blockade. Sure. I don't want benzodiazepines. Mm. I don't want propofol because they have that hypnotic effect. And they may be somewhat in that, sounding like a zombie Pharmacy Nation. They're awake, but I don't know if their mental faculties are in such a way that they're able to do what I need them to do. We do this, and this happens over a couple of days. I'm going to snap my fingers, and it doesn't just happen like that. The best way to get Joe there is it's training wheels. I've now had Joe on as a result of this skiing accident over a week. You will de-fatigue your intercostal and accessory muscles on the outside of your chest if you are knocked out, neuromuscularly blockaded, put on some sort of analgesia, and then the machine breathes for you for a week. And I know that's very hard for many people to understand, but the machine breathes for you. You don't breathe for the machine. I want to get Joe back into a routine, a rhythm, as it were. So now physical therapy has probably come in because Joe is defatigued from his muscle usage in the rest of his bed. But I can't wait for physical therapy and occupational therapy in the morning. I want to get Joe, and I want to see what Joe's doing quickly. We do what's called a spontaneous breathing trial. 3 days of this. Now we're at Thursday. Now, again, going back to what I'm saying, this just hypothetically me starting on a Monday. We're on a Thursday. Now Joe is on a PSV of 6 to 8, tidal volume 450, rate 20.
So you've exercised me every day.
I have to get you back on the bicycle. However, I cannot take your training wheels off. The training wheels, Pharmacy Nation, is the endotracheal tube. I cannot liberate him from the ventilator given the questionable numbers that I had on Monday. However, here we are to Thursday. We've done everything. Physical therapy, occupational therapy have worked with you. Your lungs are stronger. Your broken rib is healing. I can adequately extubate Joe. I have to do a blood gas, a serology on Joe to see if my numbers are good. And then I have to do what are called weaning parameters on Joe. I need them to take a deep breath. I need to know that I can get to all lobes of the lung. There are 9 lobes on the right side. There are 7 lobes on the left. There is no middle lobe on the left. It's called the lingua.
So this is one of the steps that you'll follow, sounds like, towards the end.
Correct. I'm about to take you off the ventilator. Yeah. I've extubated Joe. Joe is now off the ventilator.
Thank goodness.
However, if Joe is on that ventilator and he's breathing within 3 minutes of going from standard settings, pressure control, or the SIMV, pressure control PSV, to just straight PSV, and Joe breathes 28 to 40 breaths a minute, lying in a hospital bed, physically not doing anything, is a bad sign.
Sure.
I know, Pharmacy Nation, probably only time you'll hear me say this, Pharmacy Joe has failed. Pharmacy Joe is failing his spontaneous breathing trial. There are many triggers that I'll know that Joe isn't doing well. Physiologic characteristics of somebody not doing well. So if I'm stressing his body, his heart rate is going to go up. Anything over 20% of his resting heart rate at the time of initialization, as witnessed on the EKG, say Joe's heart rate is 80. Within 2 minutes, I get him up on CPAP. His heart rate is 98. Not
That's
good.
Too much.
Not good. But what's going to happen before I notice your heart rate is going to go up?
Arterial blood gas.
Blood pressure. Yeah, we'll get to the blood gas in a second. Yeah. Your blood pressure is going to immediately do one of two things. It's going to shoot up, i.e. Joe is now stressing his body because I'm forcing him to utilize less physical need to his body in terms of the ventilator, because now I have Joe off of the training wheels. Joe is starting to ride the bike on his own. However, not everything is working right, and the blood pressure goes sky high. So now Joe's 140, which would be a little hypertensive, 140 over 66. Going back to that 2 minutes, yes, I see his heart rate has now crossed the 90 threshold, pushing up to 93, 95, but I look at his blood pressure, 180 over 77. Now I know Joe's heart rate is kicking up because his blood pressure is up, but his blood pressure is up because his body is stressed. Joe is failing his spontaneous breathing trial, ladies and gentlemen. Consultation with the RN and the physician, I have to let them know that Joe is failing, and it would be deleterious for me to keep him on this mode. I have to get him back to support. I have to put him back on the ventilator for support. That's one of the ways I'll know. Again, it could be a pain issue. It absolutely could be a pain issue.
So my ribs could still be bothering me?
His physical movement might be hurting him. And that is limiting Joe in his ability. Joe may be getting better from the broken ribs, and they may be mending. But now the incision on his chest wall may be bothering him, or he may be having that fifth vital sign problem, pain. And now, Pharmacy Nation, this is where I come to you to help me. Joe is treading water. He's doing okay with me weaning, but I can't seem to get him past that pain issue. And I don't know if Joe's going to be able to use a
PCA
because he'll be hitting it too much.
Patient-controlled analgesia.
Which is good because he sets his own pain scale as to when he's in pain and he gets it. But unfortunately, it's such a minute amount. And once he gets it, he's most likely locked out from getting it seconds later. Our nation has been created to become fast response, fast rewards, Joe, in everything in life. Unfortunately, people make that go to medicine, which it can't. It's sure. not. It's a science, but it's not a perfect science in terms of going to his ribs. This isn't George Jetson in the 25th century, and I get to just wand him like they would on Star Trek, and all of a sudden his ribs are fixed 2.5 seconds later. That'd Joe's nice. Got 6 to 8 weeks of broken ribs. Let's not kid each other. They're broken. They're not going to get better overnight. Pain isn't just going to go away by keep hitting the analgesia button on your PCA. At some point, you're going to knock out your own ability to breathe, and now you have bigger problems that I have to take care of.
So it sounds like we're walking the tightrope here. You'll have to get the pain controlled, but you need to preserve the respiratory drive of the patient.
I'm a respiratory therapist. I'm not a pharmacist. And I'm not saying that in one way or the other, like the 88, 92 election. I knew, whatchamacallit, you're not him. No, Lloyd Benson. I knew JFK. You're not JFK. Yeah. I'm not a pharmacist. I need you, Pharmacy Nation. I need you to help me help this gentleman, in this case, Pharmacy Joe. I can deliver the mule and the cart most of the way, but I need help. And this is where our teamwork comes in with you guys, Pharmacy Nation.
So in this case, you'd be looking for getting the patient analgesia, but not suppressing respiration. So I'd be using things like NSAIDs, Tylenol.
Low-dose fentanyl, yeah, I could get away with. I don't need you to be knocked out. I need you to be tolerant to the pain.
Sure. Let's make sure I've got a couple definitions straight.
Sure.
For PEEP, that's the positive end expiratory pressure. Why are we using PEEP to begin with?
PEEP is what allows us to get into consolidated areas, oxygenation, and therefore ventilation. If I don't have PEEP, I have a Sisyphean task ahead of me.
Yeah. The lowest PEEP that would be your standard value for someone is?
Five.
And how do you know to begin with whether it's even safe to attempt a spontaneous breathing trial in a patient?
When you have seen an increase or an improvement in a lot of the factors that got you intubated, if, number one, your chest x-ray, in the case that I was discussing with you, clears itself up.
Okay.
If the vital signs that are on said EKG machine or lab values, arterial blood gases, any unfortunate invasive, i.e. bronchoscopy, open lung biopsy, CAT scan, amalgams that one gets from going downstairs to CAT scan. If they show me that you, Joe, are doing much better on the ventilator, but you could probably come off, I'm going to get you off. I would need to look you in the eyes and say, Joe, are you ready? I need to see Joe is in there. I need to know that you need to know what I need you to do for you to understand the situation that's going on in terms of you're on a breathing machine. Whether or not you believe that or you're attempting to or not attempting to take yourself off, you're on a breathing machine.
So you want to make sure that the lights are on and somebody's home.
Have to, because that's 50% of the work right there. I cannot wean somebody that is not up to snuff, as it were. It's just not going to work. They have to be up on all, knowing everything that can be necessarily needed to be done. But if I don't have that, it's kind of taken away already. You can have great numbers on your blood gases, on your x-ray, on the visualization. But if you're not in there with me, again, the Sisyphean tax.
So we talked a little bit about what a pharmacist can do to make your job of ventilating a patient easier. Primarily, it's
drugs.
Primarily, it's revolved around sedation and controlling the patient's respiratory drive. Are there any other times that you look to pharmacy when a patient's on a ventilator to assist with things?
You've been on that ventilator for 7 days now, Joe. You've been physically taken off of all of those drugs 10 o'clock the night before. You're not waking up. You're not waking up. Is now backlogging everything behind it in terms of, I can't wake him up. Why is he like this? More often than not, in a situation like that, and I'm getting a Cheshire Cat grin, it is easy for us in the healthcare field, not pharmacists, so everybody else, not pharmacists, to blame pharmacy for not being able to wake the patient up.
Sure.
So yeah. Now I need Joe to wake the patient up.
Sure. So you'll be looking for an explanation then of, you know, Why is this patient not waking up? Could the drugs be in play? How long do I have to wait before they will wake up?
And is there anything, unfortunately, Joe, I hate to say this, that I can give to wake that person
up?
Sure. I need you then for that then also. It's really sadly cyclical that it can be that way, Pharmacy Nation, that I can need you now to help me get this patient intubated. They're flailing all over the place. They're this, they're that. But then on the other hand, I needed you now to help me get Pharmacy Joe intubated. But now a week later, I need you now to get me to help Pharmacy Joe come off the analgesia because he's not waking up.
Sure. It's like walking a tightrope. How can I tell as a pharmacist if the patient is not oxygenating properly?
Oxygenating properly? Yeah. There's a couple of ways. Physiologically, there is dusking, if I may use that word, dusking of the very small and attenuated capillary areas of the body, such as your nail beds, your lips, your nose, your ears, and your toenails. If you start to show cyanosis, bluing, bluish, darkening of those extremities. You may have Raynaud phenomena, which is totally, completely separate. But if any of those things are happening, if I look up on the monitor, the saturation is going to be 87, 88 on the monitor. You can look at their nail beds, the area around their lips or their nares or the bottom of their earlobes and see a saturation that is not adequate to the number you have on the monitor. If you were to have a blood gas drawn, if that number were to come back as less than ideal, and that being on room air in terms of millimeters of mercury, HG, MMHG, it should be 80 to 100.
This is our PO2?
PaO2.
Okay.
Alveolar O2, PaO2.
Okay.
You're not getting enough oxygen. You're not. So there could be many reasons for as to why you're not utilizing or getting the oxygen, i.e. disease state, i.e. physiologic state, tumor, obstruction, what have you. Labs by monitor, if you're in the room, or physical presentation of the patient will tell you whether or not you're getting adequate oxygenation.
Okay. How can I tell, whether it's alarms or visually, whether the patient is fighting against the ventilator or biting on the tube?
You'd have to physically see them biting on the tube. If we're talking about Joe day one coming out of the accident from hitting the trees from skiing and he's on a neuromuscular blockader, that is not going to be the problem of Joe biting the tube. Joe physically can't bite the tube. I now have to find out reasons why is Joe not getting his tidal volumes. What is causing an obstruction in it? However, patients that are very active, very wide awake, and very much in need of analgesia, they can flail, they can physically dislodge tube, i.e. self-extubate. Mm-hmm. They can sit there and chew as much as they want. Alarm systems will go off. We have a high pressure, high minute, low minute, high respiratory rate alarms that we have on the ventilator. Those will start going nuts. And what I mean, nuts, ding, 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 ding. That is telling you in and of itself, get into the room right now, please.
Figure out what's going on.
There's something very wrong going on with the patient. And the safest way to deal with that is, what I have to do at that point is I have to remove the patient from the ventilator. Okay. And
so you're going
to
bag them.
BVM, bag, okay. Valve mask, bag, bag, bag. When in doubt, bag. When in doubt, bag. When in doubt, bag.
Gotcha. You'll take over for the machine, and then that will allow some decision-making time.
From my assortment of staff, inclusive of pharmacy at that point.
Gotcha. Okay. What's something you wish that more pharmacists knew about mechanical ventilation?
There is not just one group of people that are helping somebody get on a ventilator. There's a whole lot of people. One of the things I need, would like you and Pharmacy Nation to understand is, when someone, i.e. someone, a physician wants someone intubated, it's not a final jeopardy question and wait 30 seconds and I'm going to be doing the Nikita Khrushchev in the UN with the shoe on the thing. It has to happen now. It has to happen very fast. The problem is you have intensivist doctor giving orders. You have RN, multiple RNs getting patient ready, getting IVs and drips and machines ready, getting drugs ready. You have respiratory therapy, maintaining the patent airway, make sure everything else is going on. The person is still thrashing and jumping and bipping around like a Mexican jumping bean. And I'm not scolding pharmacy. I need pharmacy to understand this person needs to go down. I need you in here. It's awful when you're sitting around sorts of people and you can't give drugs. I don't know what to give. I gotcha. Can't give it to you.
So you want a very quick plan for what drugs to get, and then you want those drugs to appear and be ready for the nurse to administer so that you can gain control of that patient's
or airway. The physician, if the physician has to administer
sure.
medication.
Yeah.
I need them to understand we have to intubate this patient. This has to get done. This has to get done rather quickly. Let's not banter about, well, we could do this. Well, we could get that. Well, we could. How about we get the drug? The physician's going to order what the physician's going to order, lest the pharmacist step in and he or she says, I think this would be ideal, versus bantering about a couple of drugs. Can we do this? Can we do this? Can we do this? Can we do this?
You want the decision made and the plan implemented and the discussion.
Not going to slam on the desk again, Pharmacy Nation. Has to get intubated now. I'm not waiting 5 minutes. I am not waiting 5 minutes. Worse than that, I don't want somebody pushing something in an elevator or pushing something in the room that neither the respiratory therapist nor the pharmacist nor the physician knows about. And now the situation is, now I really have to get the person intubated.
Sure. Gotcha. Pete, thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to add that we left out?
Teamwork. Together, everyone achieves more. We place physicians at the top of the layer cake. John Donne said, no man is an island. So when we do this, what we do for the people, like they had in the Roman Senate, salus populi est suprema lex. The safety of the people is the highest order. You're dealing not with a case or case study, or let's see what this can do, or what we're going to have to do. You're dealing with a person who has a family, who is part of a family, who needs to be treated as such as a person. So you have to give all sorts of respect to them in such a case like that. However, no one does anything on their own by themselves. We all are into this together. We all fail as one. We all succeed as one. So there's nobody that is better than anybody else. No one is better than anybody else. However, when the whole team comes together, it works.
Great. Thanks, Pete. And would you consider coming back when it's time to teach Pharmacy Nation about interpreting blood gases?
Very difficult situation, but absolutely yes, Joe.
All right.
I would love to come back. Thank you very much, Pharmacy Nation. Good studying.
Thank you. Pete and I talked for about 75 minutes, and what you just heard was the best 30 minutes of our conversation. You can find the entire interview in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode24. If you know someone who would find this podcast helpful, please share it with them. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.